Night lore? I think I want to go take a night nap. Next on R. Sinclair. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of R. Sinclair. It's two nutty, wacky Americans look at the beautiful and lovely British stalwart, the ZX Spectrum.
It's new gimmick.
That's the new gimmick because it's the truth. We're just two good old down in their luck, good old hillbilly West Virginians looking at this magnificent British machine. It's the meeting of East and West. And I'll be your guide, amigo Aaron.
I want a new guide.
Joined by a grumpy doofus named the Brent. How's it going today, the Brent?
I want a new Brent.
Let me tell you, we all do. But listen, luckily, thank God this show is built on the backs of our abilities, personality, or our wit. Because we're actually going to look at a cool game this week. We're looking at Night Lore, a game that has a place in history in the ZX. Sort of broke ground. We're going to talk about the game, but I want to talk about the ground it broke first. You've got a game here that's sort of like, I'm not going to say it was the first because it wasn't.
It wasn't.
But this was the kind of the big daddy of the isometric view games.
Sure.
The old isometric view. And then this was a revolutionary concept at the time where everything mostly had been just a 2D flat, you know, just the normal thing you would expect. And then all of a sudden, here's a 3D world that you can move around and you can move. There's depth. There's width. Oh, there, I'm just saying this is what it ushered in. And of course, this concept got refined or whatever. And there are still isometric games that come out occasionally today. And sometimes they're like puzzle games and sometimes they're RPGs. Like, what's your opinion on the old isometric? Is this a gameplay slant that you enjoy?
I'm not a fan of it.
What? Why? What? You don't like anything.
I think the strengths of isometric... which is mainly it's a unique view. You can hide things on the screen in ways that you can't in with other perspectives.
You do hide things. There's no doubt about that.
All that is totally hampered by controls. Having up, down, left, right suddenly become diagonals.
Yeah.
Is not for me. It's the same reason why I'm not a huge Qbert fan.
I was going to say, I call it the Qbert perspective. Yeah, they had it, but they did it right in the arcade.
In the arcade, they did. Because they just twisted the stick 45 degrees.
Right.
And I mean, you can kind of simulate that at home, but
yeah, just turn your joystick.
But it still doesn't feel right. Here's the thing: there aren't a ton of isometric games. I mean.
What do you mean? There's zillions of these things.
No, there's not.
I got a big list of them right here in front of me.
Well, that's fine. But when you compare it to 2D and 3D games, there's not a lot of isometric games. I think that the only way to do isometric and make it a viable perspective is puzzle games. And there are plenty of games that get it right. There are plenty of games that get it right. This game gets it right. But I think that for me, the control hurdle is too difficult to overcome for the added benefit you get. Plus, especially nowadays, you don't get any benefit from a widescreen format, a 16:9 format, because you have to basically work within a square for the isometric to work.
I don't know about that. You don't have to do that.
Yes, you
can stretch it out. Why?
Does it look right stretched out?
Listen, you're nuts. You're crazy.
Okay.
And just as a few examples of the kind of the heavier hitters. And I mean, listen, once this hit on the ZX, there were tons of these things. But like, this is a system that's used a lot, like for example, in RPGs. Like Diablo is one that comes to mind that uses an isometric. Age of Empires is another one that uses it. So these are pretty big games.
Sure.
That use this thing.
And I love Age of Empires. I love some real-time strategy games that use isometric.
Fallout 2 is another one that people like that had the isometric view. I mean,
not my favorite Fallout.
If you use it properly, is it better than Fallout 76?
What? That doesn't.
I hate it. They base a Fallout in West Virginia, and this is the one they give us. Thanks a lot, jerks. Now we're the jerk state because of that, but
I don't know. We had a head start.
You know, you've got to. when this game came out, and this, and they unveiled this isometric view.
Yeah,
this would have been unbelievable.
Sure, and back in the 80s,
and that's
absolutely.
One thing you got to keep in mind when we start looking at this game is that up to this point, this was something that had been done sparingly and not to this effect, and it really was a revolutionary scheme to make things more realistic looking, to give them more depth, to make a game feel more advanced.
Yes.
Because most games, if you think about the 8-bit era of gaming and the arcade era as well, with the exception, it's a much like when Zaxxon hit the scene and people ballyhooed that game with the same pitfalls and advantages that Zaxxon had. You know, the way you had to line stuff up and understand how the controls work.
Yes.
This would have been something that would and it did blow people's minds. Because it made them feel like they were had taken a step forward into a next generation, a next level of gaming.
Absolutely. And but see, when you talk about it like that, you're just saying, hey, look, it's a gimmick.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's a gimmick. A laser disc is a gimmick.
No, I mean, it is a gimmick, but it's a gimmick that can be used in a way that makes it retain some functionality that makes it unique. Where you can tuck things behind objects, where you can see, you know, have that push and pull puzzle aspect.
Yeah.
Where you're, you know, it's still a grid. It's still a grid. Okay. It's a top down grid turned 90 degrees.
Well done.
No, well, I mean, it's not, though.
I mean, it sort of is.
No, you understand isometric is not that.
Right.
It's turned and tilted.
Right.
But what I'm saying is when you have a game. Look straight down, right?
Yeah.
And you have a game that's isometric. The only thing that you gain perspective-wise is being able to tuck items behind something or have that faux 3D effect, sort of like Zaxxon has. And if you use that, if you use the isometric view to actually have that gimmick do something in your game, it's a part of your game, that's fine. Then it's not a gimmick. But there are tons of games. Was it Viewpoint?
Yeah.
Was Viewpoint the shooter?
That was the Neo Geo and arcade
that
shooter.
That was gimmick. Because
it was a different type of play. I mean, I think Viewpoint's not a bad game at all. It's certainly attractive. It played off of its good looks. But I mean, it gives you a different, you have to put your mind in a different state to play a game like that. And it also does have advantages for what they can do on the screen. You're bringing in objects that roll around that grid. Of course, this is a Neo Geo game, much more advanced than a game like Night Lore, you know, with much better hardware. But I mean, it gives you different ways to listen. There's a million shoot 'em ups, a million of them. But how many of them look like that? There's not as many. There are some, but
what
not that
I'm
many.
Saying is. That isometric view for Viewpoint was a gimmick.
Well, no, I think they worked at it well. I don't think
they used any part of what makes isometric special in Viewpoint.
I think it let them also do some like pre-rendered, like ray trace style chips and stuff that were in that game that you wouldn't stand out as well on a flat 2D game because that you wouldn't get the depth. You wouldn't be able to render it in such a way to give it to make it look better. Don't get me wrong, the view on Viewpoint's actually absolutely part of the gimmick, but it's not like that's all they did. You know, just like Zaxxon, when it came out, their minds were blown. Is it the best shooting game of all time? No. But it's good. It's a fun game.
Right.
You know, and they came up with something different. It was clever.
Well, Zaxxon in stages 1 and 3, when you're actually flying through the base, use the isometric gimmick to accomplish something. Stage 2.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's like a crappy shoot.
I agree. I agree with you on that. That's where when you have a void and you have to that it fails.
Can you
there.
Imagine how much Zaxxon better would have been if you stage 1 you have the isometric, stage 2 it rotates and you're behind the ship.
Yeah.
That would have been better. Oh my gosh, that would have been so much better.
And speaking of Zaxxon, in case you missed my ColecoVision stream a couple weeks ago, I beat Super Zaxxon on the ColecoVision. Bam.
Wow.
So you should go back and watch that. It was great. It was a celebratory feel in the air. But we're not here to talk about ColecoVision. We're here to talk about a little ZX Spectrum, Brent.
Yeah.
So we might as well get into it here because this one, you know, it's funny when this game came up. I'll be honest with you, we're not, people may be stunned to know that we're not British. We're American, but from West Virginia. No, we're from West Virginia. And so this game, I had heard of this game, but I didn't realize what the game, the importance of the game was until I started looking into it. So again, Night Lore is the game we're looking at this week. This was published by Ultimate Play the Game, big name over there. The Stamper brothers, and we've talked about them before. Tim and Chris Stamper were behind this one. Gosh, some of the stuff they've done over the years. Attic Attack, Jetpack, Saber Wolf, Alien 8, Underworld, Gunfright, Lunar Jetman. All, by the way, they founded Rare after they found the Ultimate Play the Game. And then did a ton of stuff for you know, Rare stuff. They were Nintendo's number one, you know, out of Japan game manufacturer for quite a while. And they were putting out the studly awesome stuff for the NES and Super NES. So these guys, the Stampers, made themselves a crap load of money, brother. And it's because they were great at what they did. And, you know, it's funny because Rare, I believe Rare was responsible for stuff like Donkey Kong Country was one of theirs, I believe.
Yes.
And that game's another game that they in some ways, this game reminded me of that, not in the gameplay, but in the revolutionary changes that they made.
The innovation
that blew people's minds because it was another graphical step forward. Again, some people, it's funny, I was listening to Retro Asylum the other day, and they were people in there killing Donkey Kong Country. I was baffled. I thought this was a great game. Me and the kid loved all those games, but they hated it. Yeah. But the point of it is, it's a divisive game, and this game is sort of like that too. So it's funny that the Stampers were behind two of these games that were like big jumps forward that not everyone liked.
I don't know, man. This was pretty universally praised back in the day.
Well, I'm talking about now. So was Donkey Kong Country. Like, how many reviews did you remember they said, like, yeah, this is no good?
Well,
everyone loved it.
No one ever says that.
No, people do.
Well, they're wrong.
Well, so okay. Again, this was designed by Chris and Tim Stamper. They've got it listed. I looked on Mobi because they just have those two as doing it. But Mobi's got it set up that says Tim Stamper and Carol Stamper did the graphics. And programming was done by Chris Stamper and John Lathbury. And the cover artwork was even done by Tim Stamper. These are very talented people, the Stamper crew, the clan.
The cover art to this sucks.
I thought it looked good. I thought it was really stylistic. Wait.
Do you mean the box art? Or do you mean the box art. Yeah, no, the box art's horrible.
I thought it looked good. This would work on your 48K specy, and at the time of release, by the way, keep this in mind, even back in those days, was £9.95. Not too bad. You know, that's
full price game back then.
Well, I'm just saying, you got a lot of bang for your buck, I think, on this one. This is a single-person isometric game, as we mentioned. And this is a flip screen joint that you when you go from room to room. This got released. I was surprised, actually, the brand on this one. This got released in 84 on the Spectrum. I knew that. November of 84. So right at the end of the year. Just in time for Christmas, by the way.
Well, I wonder why they do that.
And then was released on the Amstrad, the BBC Micro, the MSX, and the Famicom Disk System. In 85.
Really?
I had a look at all these, including the Famicom. Now, I will say the Famicom, the Amstrad, the BBC Micro, the MSX, they all pretty much look very similar to the ZX version. The Amstrad probably comes out looking the best, but it's just, when I say that, I mean, it's not as monochrome as this is.
Well, this is 100% monochrome.
Yeah, and also, I will say the Amstrad had really good music. I was surprised by the tune that was in it. The Famicom version is real different. You still have the day-night cycle and the werewolf stuff, which we'll get into, but it's much more open-worldy, and it's much more, you can tell they adapted it to use a control, like a more of an arcadey type of situation. It bears looking at sometime in the future.
Is it still isometric?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sora is. But you'll have to see it.
In color?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's in color. It's one you should probably put in the back of your mind palace, Brent.
You have to go take a peek at that.
Yeah, to check out, because I was surprised. And it's not listed everywhere. And some people say, it is the same game, but it's not. It's the same sort of game, but they've completely redone it. Huh. All right, so there you go. So,
interesting.
Night Lore, I want to talk about, before we get into the game proper, I want to talk about what led to this game, because it's sort of pertinent to how the game works. So, Night Lore was the third game in what's called the Saberman series, all right? that the Stanford guys did. They had Saber Wolf. They had a game called Alienate. These games all featured Saberman, the little guy in the pith helmet in this game. And if you played Saberman, if you ever played any of the other games in the series, they're 2D, straight up 2D. Word on the street is that they had this thing done well before they released it, okay? And you're asking yourself, of all those games, apparently, this one was the first. This one was done first, allegedly. We'll get into if that's true or not. They released Saberwolf, which is the earlier game, in 84. Okay, so early in 84.
Okay.
And they said that they finished this game, and they sat on it because they knew there was nothing else out for the Spectrum or anywhere that could touch it graphically. They knew that they had engineered this new slant, and they dubbed this slant a filmation. That's what they called this, sort of like animation and film combined, filmation. And that's the technique. That's what they called the technique they used to make the game. All right, and they knew no one else had this, so they just sat on it because they knew if they released this one before they released the other games, like, who would want to play those? Because it'd make them look bad. And so they released the other games. And something else they did that was interesting is that in, like, Saberwolf, I read, like, there are multiple endings. And depending on what ending you get, it'll tell you what game to go out and get next.
Ha!
So that was...
That's an awesome gimmick.
It is clever. So the Saberman, you had Saberwolf, Underworld, and Nightlore. And Underworld and Nightlore came out sort of at the same time. You know, and so they build this as the pinnacle of software development on the 48K Spectrum. They did not screw around. Something else the Stampers are known for, and I'd heard this is something, because we've covered their games before, they're known for, like, holding their cards real close to the vest. Like, they didn't release any sort of screenshots or anything, because they knew the second this came out, people were going to steal their gimmick.
Yeah.
So, like, they didn't give you nothing. And so this probably added to the impressiveness of the game, because they were like, yeah, we're not sharing anything with anybody on this one, which was pretty clever, I have to say. And they also copyrighted Filmation, although, what are you going to do? People still did isometric games. The way it's phrased, I read a couple of interviews where they talked about how they made this game, this isometric game. They basically said they had these blank isometric screens, and they would kind of cut out the areas that would need graphics. I mean, how they did this in programming, I have no idea. And they just kind of slipped them in. Whatever they did, they had a technique that worked. That's for darn sure. And so, lo and behold, these came out. Now, before we move on to the game proper, we mentioned this came out on the BBC Micro, the Amstrad, the MSX. They had asked someone to also do this game on the C64. Never happened. So this is one of those weird games that never got released, not a proper release on the C64, despite the fact they got released on, you know, usually all the sister machines would get the game.
Yeah, sure. So
this is one that didn't go that route.
That's definitely not like the C64 couldn't have handled this.
Oh.
They just didn't get... They just didn't get it ready in time.
Right. All right. Absolutely. So... this game, when you look at the docs for this game, and I looked at them, they basically consist of like a poem.
Yeah, there are no docs.
I'm not going to read the poem, but it's a poem to give you some hints.
Well, it's riddles is what it's supposed to
be. It reminds me of if there's a very famous poem you read right when you go into the Tomb of Horrors, the D&D module for Gary Gygax. And it's just sort of like, it doesn't really help you much, but I mean, like, if you really sit around and fiddle with it, you can figure it out. So the long and short of it is, Saberman is in this area here. He's got 40 days to collect, I guess, 14 objects to get out, to break the magical spell to get to end the game. All right. This game, when it comes up, there's a very nice opening screen that it depicts like a wizard. And then you get your control choices. Now, I want to talk about the control choices right away. You get the normal things you would always get. You know, do you want the keyboard? Do you want the joystick? Which joystick do you want? There's another area called in this that's very important. It's called the directional. Yeah. All right. This game has two separate and distinct ways to control Saberman. Okay. If you don't touch anything and just play it just like it's built, you have what I can what I would call a tank control.
It's almost tank control.
It's and this means whenever you push up, your guy moves in the direction he's facing, and whenever you move in any other direction except up, he will rotate. Yeah. All right. Now
up is for up, left and right rotates you 90 degrees left and right.
The advantage of this is, and there is an advantage, believe it or not, this allows you to actually manipulate objects without having to use a keyboard. You can use the joystick to do it. All right. I played both ways. If you use a directional, if you hit the directional button before you start the game, then you move your guy in just like you would expect him to move. Up moves him up, right moves him right.
Super controls.
And your button jumps, and then you can pick up and drop stuff. You can pick up and go through your inventory with the 0 and 1 button, and I believe the return button. I rigged them up special, but that's the way I would recommend you play. Which one of those did you choose when you played?
I went directional. I did start off with tank controls, and I did not find it enjoyable, so I moved on pretty quick.
Right. So once you've established your control setup, you hit the button, you're in the game. Now, this game has a static, never-changing map, okay? In fact, I've got a picture of the map right here I'm looking at. And the map, it's not the hugest game ever, but it's a good size map. All right. You're going
like to 35 rooms, somewhere like
that. Oh, way, way more. It's got like 120 areas, I believe is what it is.
Ah,
but
okay.
In each area. So when you start this game, it's going to start you in one of four different areas. There's four different places you can start. And if you look at the map, you can tell right away. Where you start.
Because, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For example, if you start at a place, you're in the middle of a four-way intersection, you're at one spot. If you're at an area where you're at the middle of a, like, basically a right turn, you're in one spot. So if you play the game enough or have a map, you can tell where you're at. And then from there, you can decide, okay, how do I want to approach this? It reminded me sort of like, you know, a boat playing Adam's Family, like boat could tell which set of rooms I want to go after. What, you know, how hard is this? How do I want to ramp this up? These again, this is an isometric monochrome game. So what are you going to see? What they've done is they've simulated walls. They basically, we've seen this before because we've played games after this, but you'll see bricks, that make up walls and archways that make up walls, and there won't be a whole wall. They'll put in some of the bricks, and then you sort of, your imagination sort of fills in the blank area. When you first saw this, Brent, because I mean, it comes out right away. What did you think of the setup on this in terms of the way it looks?
Graphically, this game is stunning.
Yeah, it's quite good.
The animations, the room layouts use the black and white to its fullest potential. You never feel like you are get confused on what room is what. You could tell just by playing it, this was a static map. It never felt like you were lost. At least I didn't. I felt like I knew the directions I was going.
Did you use a map?
I did not use a map. I didn't need to use a map.
I couldn't memorize that many. That was too much for me to memorize.
But you don't really have to memorize everything. You just have to memorize, because the castle has wings, basically. And you know when you go off in one wing, once you get to a certain point, you know you have to go off on one wing, get everything from that wing, and then you can go to another wing, get everything from that
wing. Sort of, the wings are sort of like for example, one area you're going to see a lot of like orbs, for example. One area you're going to see maybe a lot of ghosts. I mean, they're not
sort
all.
Of,
I mean, you can sort of that. You can, you know, they're, so they're sort of, I'm not going to say they're themed, but there's, that's, it seems what it's, what it is. And
graphically, though, I felt that each area was distinct enough, visually distinct enough by its room configuration that I could keep track of where I was. There are very few rooms that are just transitions, hallways, or whatever.
Yeah.
There are a couple, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Most rooms have their own unique setup, their own unique puzzles, enemies that are, like you said, kind of based on the area that you're in.
Yeah.
So I was blown away.
I will say, completely blown away. Just to kind of finish your thought, it's a looker. And the one thing that you can't get, me and Bo have talked about this a lot, and the ZX, it's up. You're looking at monochrome screens. You've got black and red, black and pink, black and green. It's always two colors on this. Yeah. I mean, not always, but in this game. And so you think to yourself, what a huge disadvantage this is. But in actuality,
well,
the one thing the Spectrum does is, like, when it renders these screens like this, they're super sharp.
Yes.
And super detailed. And, man, that goes a long way. Once you understand, okay, I'm in for a monochrome experience. You got to get past that, okay? But once you do, visually, hey, that's a bottle. That's poison.
Yes.
That's a diamond. It's not like as abstract as, say, a 2600 would be or something like, or even on the other 8-bits. This is one advantage of being the Spectrum. It's like you get these beautiful, beautiful art. And the guys, the stampers did a great job on the art package in this. They did a great job on the barriers, the walls and stuff. The various bricks are textured. They don't all go in the same direction. It looks like cobblestones or something in the walls. You know, the archways look good. You know there's depth. You know what spikes are. Now, we'll get to the disadvantages of the setup of Isometric, but, I mean, in terms of the graphics package, I got nothing bad to say. One of the best.
Absolutely fantastic.
One of the best. I mean, just a real good-looking game. So,
you know what it kind of reminded me of?
I don't.
And a game that was released, you know, what, 30 years after the fact. It kind of reminded me of Serafina. And not that it is as visually, you know, it's not studying on that level. But when you're used to seeing ZX Spectrum graphics, and when you see this, this does not look like a ZX Spectrum game.
Well, to me, it looks like the quintessential ZX Spectrum game.
No, this is so far advanced than what most things came out on this.
One thing about the Speccy is you either, this is a machine, in terms of graphical capabilities, again, the color situation aside, you're either very good as an artist or you're not. And this will expose you.
Yes.
Because if you're not good at your craft, then what you get is you can't blame the ZX for it, because we know it can crank out top shelf high fidelity graphics. That's on you, brother.
No color clash. There is.
There's a reason for that. It's monochrome.
There's two colors.
Yeah.
but when I visualize a Spectrum game, right, this does not normally come into my field of view. I'm used to expecting color clash. I'm used to expecting chunkier bits, chunkier items. This is so refined and so detailed. And really, the monochrome part of it completely just, I don't care.
Yeah. No,
I don't care.
My mind
fills in the blanks.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that one big time. And, you know, this reminds me, if you've ever played anything on the old monochrome Max, they have that same sort of, they can go. We tried, remember a couple games we played on there, and they looked real sharp.
Yes.
So you can get some more sharp graphics, that's for sure. Now, the game setup, of course, you've got your play area, but then you've got some information underneath. What you've got there is, on the lower left, is an area that will denote what you have in your inventory.
Your inventory.
You hold like three things in there. Then you've got a thing that tells you how many men you've got left. You've also got, at the lower right, a thing that denotes what time of the day or night it is.
Yes.
Okay, so
with
this game,
passing of a sun or moon.
Saberman has a problem here. And the problem is he was bitten by a werewolf. And so when the moon shines, and apparently every day in this kingdom is a full moon, then your guy, Saberman, goes through a very painful looking change, right? No matter where he's at on the screen, no matter what's going on, this change occurs.
Mid-jump doesn't matter.
And he becomes a werewolf.
Yeah.
Now, I read over and over that being a werewolf imbues you with better ability to leap. Okay, I didn't see that at all.
No.
So I don't know if that's just not true, or maybe because there's a lot of hacks in this game, maybe someone hacked it in, but I did not see that. To me, they're exactly the same, except for a couple key differences. There are certain areas that if you're a werewolf, stuff will attack you.
Yes.
And if you're not a werewolf, stuff won't attack you.
Yes.
All right. Usually it's like a ball or a ghost like that. I can't tell you every instance, but I did notice this a couple of times. And the funny thing is, if you're in there when you change, they'll come after you.
Yeah.
This is an odd game choice. I can see, I mean, for depth of the game, I guess I can see why they did it. But it happens a lot. The day-night cycle happens fast.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, you've got 40 days to finish this game. And at the bottom of the screen, it'll tell you what day you're on. And every day-night cycle denotes a day. All right. But, I mean, that shows you how quick it goes. And this can happen at the worst time, when you're jumping something or when you're running around or doing something. What did you think about the day-night cycle with the change? And did you think it was too much, too little? What did you think?
Well, let's first talk about the transformation itself.
Yeah.
There is a stunning graphical representation of you morphing into the werewolf.
Oh, it's stunning. But it's kind of wacky.
It's stunning, it's stunning because it looks brutal.
Oh, yeah. I'll give you that.
It has this chirping noise sound effect that goes with it that's almost, I guess, represents screeches of pain. So the actual graphical transformation I thought was really good.
Mm-hmm.
However, the difference between being a man and being a werewolf are so subtle with the, like you said, the some enemies attacking
and I found it in one room, maybe two. There may be 10 more. I don't know. But I mean, those, I didn't get all over the game, so I don't know. But yeah, I saw it like a couple times.
Well, the main difference, and this goes back to the plot of the game. The whole goal of the game is to take items from within this castle and add them to a potion. And
to a cauldron.
The cauldron is guarded by a wizard. And if you are a human, the wizard does not try to cast spells to kill you, and instead will show you what ingredient goes into the pot next.
Yeah.
If you are a werewolf, he will instead conjure a spell out of the cauldron that will chase you down and try to kill you. That is really the absolute.
You know, it's funny. I was in that room a few times. I don't think I was ever a werewolf in there, so I never saw him try to kill me.
Yeah, that's what it is. The little sparkles that come out of the cauldron that shows you what you need next.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead, it's a little sparkle that comes out of the cauldron, and then it actually physically goes on the floor and chases you around.
Yeah.
That is the only gameplay difference.
Well, there are other areas where it being a wolf is bad.
But enemies attacking or not attacking, that is the only difference between being a human and being a werewolf that I saw.
Yeah, it's just to get attacked. You know, it's weird. Your wolf's kind of cute looking. You walk.
Well,
both these guys are funny. It's very cartoony.
The wolf graphic is not nearly as nice to look at as the guy graphic is, in my opinion.
You'd think being a wolf would give you some advantages, but it doesn't really help you at all.
I think this was a gameplay opportunity missed.
Yeah.
I think they should have done more with it, and I don't think it would have taken much to have it be different. And I'm going to get into it a little bit later, but the absolute worst part of this is the frequency of which you change. It is disrupting the gameplay.
Do you think it's overkill and the changing?
I think this should have been 20 days and you double the time limit night and day.
Yeah.
And that would have been...
I wouldn't have had a problem with that.
So much better.
And the thing is, one of the complaints about this game that I've read, and then again, we'll get into reviews, but these are modern complaints because no one was complaining back in the day. Is that, you know, the werewolf can happen at the worst time, which is true. Now, theoretically, you can watch that day-night cycle, and you can tell when it's going to happen, so you should just sit around waiting. This is a game of patience. You sort of really, in a lot of areas, you have to be patient, and the better players, if they see that the day-night thing's getting ready to happen, they're not jumping from one thing to the other. Keep your eye on it, but often it catches you by surprise. You know, and so it just happens.
I mean, very rarely did I get killed because of that.
Right, I'm the same way.
But what happened was I was annoyed by it almost every time.
Right. So we mentioned, Brenton mentioned this. So you've got 40 days to get the 14 objects into the cauldron in the correct order.
Yeah.
So that means the goal of this is to go around and collect these objects. There are more than 14 things you can collect. And the funny thing is, in this game, objects have a dual purpose. Number one, yes, you do need some of them to go into the cauldron, but you also, I mean, the majority of the puzzles in this game require you to have at least one object, because Saberman uses these objects to jump off, to leap off of, to get to higher areas, or to jump across certain areas to get the stuff. And so you'll need, like, the first thing you should do in this game, and I learned this pretty early on, is the very first thing you should do is go and get the easiest object you can.
Any object.
Yeah, anything. Yeah. And the objects range from, like, bottles, the poison bottles, the buckets, the chalices, the diamonds, boots.
For some reason.
And of course, keep in mind, you've got 128 rooms to go milling around in. And so you're going to, and now when I say rooms, I mean screens. So like you said, some of these are just like hallways or whatnot. Now, you're not just going to walk up and grab one of these things. Every place you need to go to get one of these things, there'll be either a trap or a puzzle or a combination of both or an enemy that you've got to deal with. Some of them aren't incredibly difficult. You've got a lot of, this is a game where Saberman will be required to do a lot of push puzzles. Push, not a lot, but some. Where you have to push stuff into spots to get to certain areas.
Most of it's platforming.
Some of it is push puzzles to get to try to, like, for example, there'll be an area, there's an area where there's like a wall, and on top of the wall are these spiked balls. And you've got to push the wall aside to make it so you can go through the wall.
Yeah.
Without pushing it too far and making a thing fall on you. There's a puzzle where you have to move a bench over to a thing, get on top of that, then you have to put up one of your items on that, then jump up to catch that and get the orb. And so as you're using these items, the trick is to use them, pick them back up as you're jumping, and go up to the top, because if you don't, you're going to lose them. So you got to jump on them, pick them up, and then jump. And while you're going to get to the other thing, to pick that up. And again, you've got a certain set inventory. I believe you have three items. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to go stash. Like, I had a stash room every time. And if you're smart, I watched a video last night of this guy. And he was a lot smarter than me. He just stashed all his crap right near the cauldron. I didn't do that. I just had an area I stashed it because I didn't know where the cauldron was at the time. But you're going to drop that stuff to go get more, but you're always going to want to keep one thing. That's for sure. The different puzzles and elements that are in this game, like I said, sometimes it's stuff that's real. There's one area or two areas where you'll jump into an area that looks like you're jumping into a pit of spikes. But there's again, this is where the depth comes in. It's a little area you can get into. This happens a lot.
Yeah.
And this is sort of to the detriment of the game. There are areas where you can go that you think you're going to die, but it's blank. And there's no way to know what's there. Now, this happens a lot. You can be behind.
It doesn't happen a lot. It happens.
Well, not just with that. But I'm saying the isometric viewpoint, one of the negatives is this doesn't have any sort of transparencies. And so you'll get behind stuff. I'll give you an example. There's a room where you go in, and a ghost has a block on its head, and the block has an item. And the ghost is running around the room like a maniac. But if you go out of the room and come back, wherever you left, the item would just fall there. And then the ghost is still running like a maniac. But I found one time where the thing disappeared because it had fallen behind something else. I couldn't see where it was. You know, this will happen. Things can get in weird spots that you have trouble seeing them. Like negotiating some pit traps, there'll be a blank area in there. You sort of have to hope it's there. Usually, if you play this enough, you can kind of guess that they've left it because the way you have to jump up to get to certain areas, there's got to be a blank area there that you could jump into, even though it doesn't look like there's one. So one of the pitfalls of the isometric viewpoint is it limiting your vantage can make it more difficult. Another thing, and this is, I guarantee you, I'm probably this, much like a Zaxxon, you've got to line up everything in this game, all right? And so what does that mean? That means taking baby steps. And I will say, and I was going to ask you about this, some isometric games limit your movements to one square at a time.
Yes.
And they do that to make it easier for you to understand where you're going to land and what's going to happen. This one doesn't do that.
Correct.
You can take baby steps to the left, to the right, and you have to get through some stuff. What did you think about the control versus the isometric grid pattern? And what did you think about the line the guy up? Did you have jump that you had trouble making? Did you miss stuff you thought you would get? Like that sort of thing.
Well, let's go way back.
Okay. Because
you've taken basically everything and compressed it into one thing. We got to pick this
apart. Open it up.
Because thing number one, the absolute worst part of this game, hands down, bar none, without question, is the item jumping. This is a horrible design choice that makes no sense. And when I say item jumping, I mean you're standing on an item and then you jump from it while trying to grab it to pick it up.
It takes some practice.
No, this is stupid. This is absolutely stupid. I have no idea why they thought this was a good thing. This is without question the worst aspect of the game. Because first of all, it makes no sense. Okay. I have no problem with putting down an item and jumping from it. What I have a problem with is the game expects you, and it 100% expects you to be doing this because there are rooms that are incompletable without doing this.
Yeah, you don't have a choice. The game
expects you to jump from the item with your jump button and then immediately hit the pick up item button, which will pick up the item that you were just standing on. This gameplay element is the absolute worst. Because even though I could get it 98% of the time, the one times or two times per game that I didn't get it, I was done. It absolutely made me want to stop playing the game because I would be jumping from a high place that was six or seven rooms away to get back to, and I had to do a stupid item jump. Now my item's up there, I'm on the ground.
And it does happen.
And it just is infuriating.
Yeah.
It is infuriating how much that ruins the game.
Yeah. And also, just to before you move on, depending on where you start, like, you have to have, we've agreed, we have to have that item.
Yeah.
And just getting that first
item. Some are tough.
It's no easy task to get that very first one, and you've got to have it.
I got to the point where I would just reset until I got the starting
point. You're not the only person that did that. Yeah. I've heard that from
both. Okay. So we got that out of the way. Thing number two you were talking about. The isometric level design is good.
Yeah.
I know you don't like it because you can hide items behind it.
I don't hate it, but I'm saying it's just a pitfall of it.
No, it's not. That is the game. It wants you to explore. It does not expect you to beat this in one thing. I never found myself saying, huh, I wonder if I can get in there, except for one room. And they do kind of do you dirty once because they have two rooms that look the exact same, except they're different colors, where in the middle, it has four spikes around a block. And when you stand on the block will disappear. And under it will either be an item or a spike.
Yeah.
And that is the only room I can think of that is absolutely made to be a trap. Because I'm sure
you think these were inadvertent. I don't think they were part of the... I mean, the things I was talking about.
Okay, but what I'm talking about, that it's actually part of the design. It's not so bad once you realize where this room is in relationship to the other room. You know which one's a trap, you know which one's not. And you can actually jump on that middle block and then jump back off and see, although it's really hard to see if there's an item there or not. Some items are, but it uses the isometric view well to hide items. And I think that's fine because I think that is the essence of this game. Lining up jumps. You're right. This lets you go so far off the grid that it's bad. It's not.
I kind of like it, but I can. It's also. It's. I like it because it lets you. They let you do stuff that in a game like this you normally couldn't do. Like you can ease to the very end of a ramp and sort of avoid stuff that you can jump beside, and that's you have to. They cooked it in, but the downside of it is you're going to have to line up those jumps.
Yeah,
and you're going to have to do it yourself. They're not going to help you.
Yeah, it's. It gives you a lot of leeway. Your sprite, first of all, the collision detection on this is fairly forgiving.
Yeah.
And it lets you.
Well, I mean, it's, I don't know, it can be pretty tough. If you get anywhere near, like this room where you just have to walk through a bunch of spikes, those are the worst ones.
I had absolutely no problem.
Boy, I did. I had trouble with those. You have to, it's hard to line up where you're walking.
The lining up your jumps, though, since you do not snap to any kind of grid, I mean, at all.
None.
At all.
And there's no grid pad on the ground or anything either, which that's something else you'd see in a lot of isometric games going forward. Yeah.
I think that it is, it's tough, but it is not nearly as annoying or game-breaking as some of the other aspects of the game. I think they could have cleaned it up by having you snap a little bit to the grid. I mean, you can go so far that your heels are off of the platform, but you're still standing in midair.
Yeah.
That kind of stick. And there are some rooms where you need that to make the jump. All of this is how do you stand or go or move to make the jump mm-hmm. or run past this object. One thing that I don't know if you knew about, but is very important to the game, if there are enemies in a room, be it little glowy spell balls or fire or ghost or whatever, if you stand on top of your object, they can't hurt you. So you can run to a place, because normally you're trying to get from one door to another, run 3/4 of the room and then stand on your object while the little thing skitters under your feet, and then he starts to leave, pick your object back up and start going again.
Sure.
Which that's helpful. They could have easily made that not the case, but it works. But this game,
well, you know, the not locking into a grid, it's funny in a way. I thought about this a lot. In a way, this game seems more, having played a lot of isometric games on the ZX, this one actually, the freedom, the extra freedom you get, it seems like this is a more modern isometric game than the other ones that lock you in. But you can see why so many games put that grid pattern on the ground and they locked you to a square and they made you move that way. But so this, it's a mixed bag.
It is.
I mean, so I don't know if I think I like this. I like the freedom more, but I died so many times stupidly.
Yeah.
Because of just running into because there are areas where all you do is just run through a room and just have little blocks of spikes and it seems like nothing. You know, in real life, think about this. You're such a klutz that you actually fall over to the spikes. You make you feel like a geek.
Well,
you know, but that's because you have that extra freedom. So it's a double-edged sword.
In my opinion, a lot of the rooms are well designed that make you think about how you're going to get traversed to get to what you need to get to. And I think there are definitely a handful of rooms where the perspective is certainly there just to make you get hung up or hit a spike or hit a wall or whatever. Overall, though, I think the room design for that aspect of it is fine.
Yeah. I gotta say, I mean, this is one of the, this game's got a rep for being real hard.
I don't think it's real hard.
Well, I mean, I think the controls take some getting used to. I had about 3 sessions of this week. I'd play. The first session didn't go well because I didn't know about the directional change. So the tank controls, I would not recommend. But again, I can see why you would want them. But it took me a while to get into the groove of this. Now, did I get 14 objects into the thing? No, I could have, but cheated. I think I could have gotten past the puzzles to get them.
Yes,
I would have lost all my men well before then. But I could get like 5 or 6 objects in there.
5 is about where I would normally.
You know, and for me, for having a game that you're really only playing for a week, that's not too bad.
Well, see, I played this game when I first started playing this game because I did what I normally like to do. I like to go in completely blind. I had no idea what I was getting into, and for the first hour of this game, I didn't know about item jumping.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Which
completely shut the game off for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after my first PlayStation, I watched the guy and I saw, I was like, okay. Because I couldn't get to anything.
Right.
I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Here's the problem. Okay. That should never be a thing.
Well,
the manual for this tries to be clever. It tries to be the riddle set, right? All this stuff.
Yeah.
Horrible decision. That is a horrible decision.
Well, hold on a second. What we're talking about here, it's a different era. All right? And hold on. In a different era, this is a game that you're going to be playing for weeks or months. And this was something that happened a lot where they kept the instructions vague because part of the game, you know how sometimes the controls are part of the game in this instance, discovery is part of the game. And that's the way they did it. I know in modern times, you look at it, like, why didn't they mention this stuff? Well, it's because that's the way it was.
No. Hey, let me tell you something. You know what? That's complete garbage.
Well, I'm just saying, that's the way I look at it. It's not an excuse. I'm not saying I justify it.
No, if that is their excuse, whatever you want to say, that is garbage. I understand that you want to make your packaging part of your game.
Yeah.
Right? I get that. I am absolutely fine with that. If you want to have add-ins to your game, that Star Tropics for Nintendo,
yeah,
where you had to dunk the piece of paper in the water to get the secret code to advance.
That's Dirty Pool,
right? Noel, I'm all for that.
Okay.
What I'm not all for is a basic needed element of your game not being explained in your instruction manual.
Well, I mean, you figure it out pretty quick.
No, you don't. Because why would you ever think that was even a thing?
Well,
it was horrible. It completely ruined the game for me.
Oh, that one thing did ruin the game.
Ruined the game.
But I mean, you figured it out. Once you figured it out,
I still had to do it.
But I mean, still, saying that ruined the game. Come on.
Ruined the game for me.
I'm not buying that.
I would not recommend this game to anyone because of that problem.
Oh, God. Because you're just being silly now.
No, I'm not being silly. This is an aspect of the game that is so infuriating that...
Now, wait a minute. You're saying that the fact that they didn't mention this or the fact that it's in there?
No, the item jumping off.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying you ruined the game because it wasn't mentioned.
No, the item,
jumping. You're less of an idiot than I thought. I was like, my God, he's lost his mind.
So, what did the reviews of the day say so I can really start unloading?
Well, I don't know why you're so full of hate, because this game, I thought this was a pretty good game. In fact, I thought it was way better than I thought it was better than I thought it would be. This game got mega scores, Crash 94%, C, V, and G gave it 9 out of 10, Eurogamer 8 out of 10, Sinclair User 9 out of 10, Your Spectrum 14 out of 15, Crash Smash Awards, Golden Joysticks, the whole nine yards. It was a big player.
Yeah.
It was a huge player, and people loved it. We actually got a lot of Discord action, if you're interested in hearing it. Do you want to comment on that? I've got it right here.
I want to talk about.
Go ahead.
One thing that we have not mentioned at all yet that is desperately needed
is
the slowdown on this game is absolutely atrocious.
There is some slowdown.
When you are in a room by yourself without other moving objects, it flows like silk. It is silky smooth. But if there are anything else moving on the screen, you start to get slowed down. And if there are multiple enemies, which happens in very, very few rooms, the game becomes, I'm talking less than a frame per second type stuff. It's really, really bad.
It does slow down. Yeah. I played this on the Mister, and it was the same thing on there.
But that's all excusable.
Okay.
It's all excusable in my eye. I mean, it sucks. I wish it didn't do it. But when they added that item jumping, I swear to you, Aaron, this game is so good. I'm trying to think of another game that is so impressive on so many levels that has one aspect of it that makes the game unplayable in my eyes. And I cannot think of one. I cannot think of a better example than this game. The item jumping thing annoyed me.
Do you hate it
so much?
What if your guy automatically picked up the thing he jumped off of?
That would be fine.
Okay.
That would be fine because it's... Well, calm down a second.
Yeah. Don't get that fired up over night lore.
I know that this is a gameplay element, that it's a skill that they want you to try to master. And I understand that they want to basically punish you for failing to pull it off.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess you sort of got it right there. Yeah.
In my opinion, that is the most disrespectful thing you can do to a gamer.
You have lost your mind.
No, Aaron, it is so game breaking and it is so infuriating when you lose all this progress because you miss this one horribly timed, horribly executed maneuver that they could have very easily just said, when you jump, you pick up the item you were standing on, made it one button, and I would have liked it so much more. Yeah, I'm frustrated for the game. I want this to have been a better game. As it is now, I understand in the past this was revolutionary, and it deserves all the praise that it gets.
Yeah.
But playing it, and it's not playing it in a modern setting. I'm not saying that all the graphics are so sucky, I don't understand why. No, this was a design choice that you could not make in today's day and age. and have a successful game. And it's so maddening to me that this was done the way it was done, to the point that I cannot recommend people go and play this.
Well, I eventually got pretty good with picking up the thing. I you're making way more of it than I would have.
Dude, there were very few times. I mean, I died a lot, okay? I died a lot. Because it's real easy to die in this game. You can just brush up against an object and die. I quit more games than I lost all my lives to because I made a jump where it would have taken six or seven rooms to get back to the item I just jumped off.
Well, that's I did that too.
Maybe I just had bad luck. Maybe, you eventually get really good at that. In the hours that I played it, I did not get really good at it, and it made me turn the game off more often than I died.
Yeah, I think you over dramatized the trauma of standing on a thing and picking it up. It's not that bad. I think as a gameplay choice, what would have been more fun is just to give your guy a permanent thing that lets him do that. You know, just like, oh, this guy brings a step stool or something. I don't know, or a spring boot.
There's
something.
Two levels of jump in the game. If you tap the button, you go one height. If you hold a button, you go another height. It just I
call that the Smurf effect.
You know, I'm done.
That's the Smurf effect.
Read the reviews.
But overall, it wasn't irritating. And it could, they do add an element to the gameplay that makes it so you could, like, make one mistake or not register one pickup and cost you the game. So, yeah. But, I mean, I don't think it's that bad. So, let's talk about our reviews here. First, on the docket, it's our buddy Thangley. Thangley chimes in. He says, I have strong memories of a 10-year-old me trying to get fun out of this back in 1989. It was already 5 years retro. I couldn't get the directional controls to work for the keyboard, so mostly I spun on the spot, then died when I tried to move or jump. At that age, I'd already liberated a whole isometric planets in head over heels and nearly achieved the great escape in 3D. Nightlord didn't compare well to those experiences. It was one of those, the wizard is cooking something, but has forgotten to do any of the shopping games. Actually, we've played a couple of those. I quickly wrote the whole experience off as a bad history lesson and found something else to play. Trying Nightlord again as an adult, I think that was a bit harsh. I can now emulate the joystick I never had as a child, so the controls work properly. Nocturnal gimmick is cool, and just exploring a few rooms at a time is more satisfying than I remember. The problems that made it look so dated in 1989 is still here. The game is still just a hunt for casserole ingredients. The werewolf needs to see a chiropractor, and many of the rooms would have been more playable if they'd tilted the floor, if they'd tiled the floors as later 3D games did. Slowdown is really bad in places, but that's all unfair. Nightlord was essentially the launch title for these isometric games and earned a place in specky history by being the first of its kind. It just has the unusual problem. It has the usual problems that many launch titles have, struggling to create something compelling to do with its new technology and tacking the incremental improvements of the game that follows in its wake. This game pioneers the graphical style that would go on to make some of the greatest masterpieces on the system. I don't think Nightlord is an isometric masterpiece. Those games came later, but for a first go, it's not bad either. 6 out of 10.
So who was that?
That was Thangley.
Okay.
Pajaco chimes in, Old Faithful. I first encountered this game on the Beeb, and it blew my 9-year-old brain. A 3-flicking-D game on my computer. I have fond memories of Nightlore and a large soft spot for it. I have played hours of it on many machines, but the specky version is my main go-to when I want some Nightlore action. But I have never completed this game without cheating. I have done it with save states and even then it took an age to do. Why? Because underneath the technical wizardry, Nightlore is not a good game, and it never was. I know, hot take, right? It was brutally hard and downright unfair in places. It relies a lot on luck from your starting position, the item distribution, and the order that the caller wants those items. Plus, enemies move randomly, so it's easy to get killed through no fault of your own. There's too much trial by death and a very limited life count. You will be dying lots. Oh, and there's a timer, so you can't hang around. Playing for around 2 hours tonight, I didn't get a single item in the cauldron and completed at best 10% of the game. I still love the game, though. Night Lore is a wonderful watermark in video game history, but with the rose-tinted specs off, it doesn't stand up well. 9-year-old me gives this 9 out of 10. Pretend grown-up me gives this a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
And lastly, Jed Byrne chimes in. When it comes to Night Lore, there are two types of player. There are those who were there at the time, the experience of having something like Jet Set Willy suddenly break out into a third dimension to have wacky little sprites transformed into full cartoon characters stays with them as they still approach this game with a sense of awe and wonder. Then there are those like me who arrive at the spectrum scene saturated with isometric games. For us, Night Lore is just a janky precursor to better things that solve the problems like awkward controls and slowdown. It is still possible to appreciate the game's importance. Ultimate pushed the envelope on what a game could be. The graphics and the animation still look great, especially the transformation. This game was an incredible achievement. So there you go. Now, with all that said, I'm going to go a little higher than any of these guys did. I think this is better than 6.5. I don't know. I got into this game. I really enjoyed it because it's one of these isometric games tend to leave me behind sometimes because they get too complex and difficult. At least this one, it's a screen by screen game, and every screen, if I can get through that screen and get the item, I feel like it's a win. I like a series of small victories when I play a game. And so, yes, everything they said is true. The slowdown, the item pickup things are kind of weird. The controls can be odd and hard to use without a grid pattern. But I still enjoyed it, and I liked the lush graphics in it, and I like the fact that this is something that was one of the, I mean, if you think about the firsts of things, when it comes to like something as complicated as an isometric game, and this is the first that recognizes the first big-time player in that field, I think it's an outstanding achievement. For first and something so complex, did it hit the mark on every point? No, but I think it got a lot of stuff right, and it certainly paved the way for games to build off of it. So I think I really enjoyed the game.
I think it's very interesting that so many people agree with the history of this game, but find different flaws in it.
Yeah,
because I never thought the game was too hard. The slowdown, well, obviously annoying, I never thought was so far it was game breaking, and no one else even mentioned the jumping off the items thing.
Well,
which,
yeah,
it's weird. That's awesome. I love it, but it's weird.
We probably had more problems than most, and I will say, we came nowhere close to beating the game, and so yeah, it's a hard game to beat.
Well, no,
I came anywhere near close to beating.
I got 5 items in. That's 1/3 of the game.
Well, that's not close, though, is it?
I think it's close.
This game had advertised a sequel, but that sequel never came out, unfortunately. And this was the last of the games that year. I will say that I looked this up on the eBay. Remember this thing debuted at £9.95. You can get this thing now between $17 to $48. I saw a pretty wide swath in the pricing on this. I also should mention a couple other quick items. This game has been redone with added graphics, sound, hacked in stuff. I actually checked out a couple of the hacked up versions that add graphics. There's one that added, I love this one, it added music to the game, and I saw this in a fellow's video at the
end. Yeah, the 128 thing. Yeah.
At the end of it, it plays ABBA's Money, 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 which I like. The ending of this is not that satisfying. It's just a text screen. It's kind of a bummer. There's also they made an updated DOS or a Windows version of this, which looks pretty good. There's also a fellow that ported this to C64, and also, I don't know if it's done, but I saw people working on a TI version of this as well. So this is a game that's still getting some action all these years later. I think this is if you're going to be the first at something, I think this is a very excellent example of putting your best foot forward. And you can see why the Stampers sat on this for a while. And you can see why this hit with such force when it came out. And you can see why they went on to do incredible things.
Yeah.
So a very, very fun game, the Brent.
Now, Aaron, let's talk a little bit about what we got coming up next week.
All right. What do we got coming up next week, the Brent?
We got that thing that how you have to do the stuff to make the thing go.
The Pluto.
That's it.
Now, I've not looked into the Pluto. I haven't had a chance this week. Have you looked into it that much?
I have not. And I'm fearful because...
You're fearful? Why?
I was reading what some of the folks were saying on Discord that you can't just go get the emulator. You have to request access to the emulator.
Oh.
And I have yet to go down that path, and I'm a little scared.
We always figure out a way. I'm not worried.
I'm very worried.
I also want to mention that we've already thankfully got our pick for the next game on Arch Sinclair, which we'll be playing in a couple weeks. Normally, you know how normally I have to sit around like an idiot trying like gangbusters to figure out what's going on? Well, this time I was more prepared, the Brent.
Really? Okay. Hit me up. What is it?
We will be playing. You're going to love this one, Brent. And we had, this was a pretty close race between three games. But the game that was the big winner, Jeff Capes Strongman. Jeff Capes Strongman will be the next game on the list. I've heard of it, and I've heard of Jeff Capes as well. So, and that's spelled cool guy style, G-E-O-F-F. And so that'll be the next Specky game.
Well, I'm sure that's a person's name.
But we're going to have to figure out this. Well, they spell it G-E-O-F-F. No one spells it like that here.
He does. Yeah.
I'm just saying that's a cool British spelling. Everything's got to be contested with you. One thing's for sure, the strong man on this show is me. So anyway, that's what we got cooking up. So next week, a little ARG action. And then the week after, we'll be back on R. Sinclair. I think that's the way it works. Any parting shots? Anything you want to say here before we take it to the house?
Nope.
All right. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll be back next week with ARG Presents. Until then, rewind tape
and press play.
Bam.